You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this wonderful podcast. And on today's show, it's solo, all me, all the time. I'm going to do three segments, about 25 minutes long today. We'll do a second segment on the good and the bad of today's game. A third segment breaking down the last 2 minutes. But to start this podcast, it's 5 minutes of calm the fuck down. So if you got children listening to this podcast, you should mute this currently. So the Pacers have lost three in a row now, and everybody's freaking out. By everybody, I mean a small segment of people on Twitter. But it seems like people are disappointed in their start, clearly, which they have every right to be. And the people are worried this team is not very good, or whatever reason, they're not going to be very good. But I'm here to tell you right now that any team that does not have their best player and a guy who's committed to, let's say, about 18 to 20% of the cap not playing is not going to be good. Now, granted, should the Pacers team be 2-1? Probably. Should they beat the Cavs and not been blown out by who knows how many points? 11, I guess it ended up being 11, but it was probably 25 points at one point. Probably not. Should they beat the Pacers in one of these two games? For sure. But their glaring weaknesses are obvious. They don't have any clutch play. They don't have a go-to guy when they need to get a bucket, frankly. And you know why they don't? Because their very best player, who they pay a lot of money to do that to, who they pay almost $22 million a year to do, is not playing for the team currently because he blew out his kneecap or whatever he did to his knee, patella tendon. We can call it whatever it was. But that does not mean this team is not good. Yes, the bench has been mediocre to terrible at times. Frankly, terrible. Mediocre is probably being too generous. But once again, Jeremy Lamb is out right now the last two games, which already a thin roster is down basically they're down both their top two shooting guards already, wherever maybe play Sumner up there, who knows. So an already thin team is down another pretty talented player, which hurts the team overall. And not having your best player forces your best bench player to start, which screws up the whole lineup. Yes, the Pacers could do a better job staggering. They tried that. They staggered a little more Sabonis and Turner, which is better for this team because, you know, it put Sabonis, a very good offensive player, on the court, a unit that needs offense badly. There was some play with McConnell there. And yes, the Pacers missed a ton of just like inside the rim buckets. I mean, I can count probably 5 to 10 shots during the game that the ball was inside the rim and rolled out, and it just was not their night. It was just bad luck. But even with all that bad luck, the team fought its way back. They had a 4-point lead with a minute left, and Brogdon makes a three. If TJ Warren realizes he has more time, makes a pass out to somebody, they probably win this game. Yes, you can be angry they didn't win the game. That's fine. The reasonable take to have. It's certainly fine to be mad when your team doesn't win a game. But to think that it's disaster, this thing is terrible, the Pacers are whatever, not going anywhere, is just not true. They lost three games. They'll probably lose three games another time this year in a row. If they lose in Brooklyn, they might lose four in a row, whatever. At the end of the day, yes, but let's say give me 10 more days or 2 weeks, if they're not close to 500, whether that's like 4-4, 3-4, somewhere close to 500, then it's panic time. Yes, this team goes 0-10 or whatever, start of the season, yes, it's panic time. But right now it's been three games, and at the end of 10 games, they're 5-5, 4-6, 6-4, whatever it is, then they're fine. This team basically has to go 500 without Vic, probably even a little less. But let's say Vic missed 25 to 30 games, and the team goes 13-16 in Vic's absence. Let's give it that number. That's kind of where I'm at, 29 games there. Now it's a random, really random number to fall at. This team will still be okay. He'll come back. He'll make the pieces fit a little better. And they'll probably still sneak in as, you know, a 7-8 seed. This was not the Pacers' year. This year is not the Pacers' year to win a championship or even compete for one. This is a transition year. They signed a lot of guys to two-year contracts or 2 years left on their deal. They traded for them for the idea that next year is the year. You get Vic, who plays half this year or two-thirds of this year, and comes back next year and is fully healthy after a full offseason. You get Sabonis on a not worried about a contract year. I guess he signed an extension, but still doesn't worry about his contract offseason. You have Turner making another jump, which, frankly, Turner's looked pretty solid, I thought, through these first three games. He could have been certainly a little better here and there, but honestly, as a guy who really is sort of the best two-way player on this team right now, and having to burden a lot of load defensively, especially some of the things Sabonis makes, and having to somewhat be a decent offensive player, he's been pretty solid. So that's why this team, this year, is kind of a throwaway year. Yes, by all means, they make the playoffs, it's disappointing. They should make the playoffs, yes. But If they somehow don't, they end up winning 35 to 38 games. But as long as Vic starts to look like Vic towards the end of the year, it will all be good, because ultimately what matters is this year is a tryout for next year, and next year is the year where the Pacers will make, hopefully, a leap to a 50-55 win team with enough talent, because of guys like Brogdon and Vic will mesh, adding in Sabonis, Turner for a year together, put Warren on top of that, Lamb off the bench. Hopefully some rookie will pop, whether that's Sumner, Holiday, or Leaf, probably Sumner right now, who also has been a highlight right now. But truly, it's been 3 games. Give it 10 games. Tony and I preached this in yesterday's podcast. Give it 10 games, then we worry. But for now, it's not that big of a deal. The Pacers will be fine. They will lose 3 games. They might lose 4. This will happen again in the year, in the regular season again. They will go through a 3-win streak once again. It just so happens that it starts the year, which is concerning, right? Getting that first win feels like always the hardest. In the past couple years, they got the first win on the first game of the year, so you got over that hump. But this team was, I think, 6-9 last year or 2 years ago when they rebuilt the team one more time. So it's not a big deal. It is not a big deal yet. If this team goes 2-8, we can start to panic. If they go 3-7, panic. But right now, let's all take a deep breath. Let's focus on the Brooklyn game coming up. We'll focus on Cleveland coming after that and not worry too much, because I think this team will be okay. So everybody calm the bleep down. All right, now let's get to breaking down the Pistons game. All right, I made a list for tonight's game of the good and the bad. I was going to do ugly, but I'm not that conventional. So, the good. The last 5-7 minutes, I thought the Pacers starters had their best, you know, defense and offensive moment as a unit. I thought they shut down the Pistons when it mattered most. They were making plays defensively. They were playing in a system that felt like they all understood where to be at times and whatnot. And on the other end, they made some good off passes. They had guys open. They had good looks. They obviously took the leads. They had a couple great shots. I thought they looked pretty good during the stretch. I know, you know, that last shot by Brogdon, I guess before the 2 Warren shots, was kind of the shot that would have, I think, won the game or been kind of the sealer of it. And he missed it, but they got good looks. They figured out how to get guys in spots with open shots and whatnot. But they're struggling because they don't have a go-to score at the end of games. But overall, I think the offense started to kind of gel and looked like there was some... I mean, for the first 2 games, it looked like there was no plan. There was no understanding of the guys how to play together. They're starting to figure out a little bit, and it's going to take time. With really 4 guys who've never played together, really 4 new starters on the same team, really 5 guys who never started with each other, literally all 5 guys who never played a starting minute together, and basically Turner's most only who actually played together, and it's been a very minuscule amount. It takes some time to learn each other, strengths, weaknesses, where to be, how to feed a guy on the right, you know, he's cutting to the rim and whatnot. Like, they miss a lot of the easy passes right now. Like, they don't see the court fully because they don't really know where a guy's going to be. That's going to take time. But overall, I thought they made a nice stride offensively in the last 5-7 minutes and defensively, really, to showing some promise that maybe in 20 games this is going to be a good basketball team, basically. From the bad, and I kind of hit this already, the clutch late play. Without Vic, you can see it. And they started last year with the same problem. Without Vic, they have no way to get a bucket, like, easily at the end of games. Vic was their guy. You know, I have no doubt in my mind, if Vic took that 3 at the last 2 seconds and got the same look TJ Warren got, it probably would have gone in. I mean, that's just all speculation and whatnot, but that's what I think would have happened. They struggle to find that, and it's honestly not, most teams struggle with that anyways, so it's not that big of a deal. When Vic comes back, he'll step in. You know, we'd like to see a guy like Warren step up, maybe be a little bit more clutch. Obviously, he had a big 3 to go up 94-90, so you can't fault him there. Brogdon missed a big clutch 3, which, frankly, that you can fault him for. But at the end of the day, they pay Vic to be that closer, and they need him back, and it's not, like I said, not that big of a deal. On the other positive, I thought Warren started to put together a couple of solid offensive stretches and started to be competent on defense in a way. So he had 5 steals. That's, I'm assuming, a career high for him. I don't know for sure, but that's got to be in his one of his career best. Let's put it that way. He had 5 steals. He looked really, really good on that end of the floor, just kind of making plays, kind of playing the Thad Youngish role, just cutting off passing lanes, deflecting balls, like that. Things that you can tell Warren has been told by Coach Dan Burke and the other defensive minds in the Pacers roster, coaching roster, to, hey, look for this play, you know, make this play, use your length to your advantage when you're on defense. Then offensively, outside of him being a spotty 3-point shooter. I want to see how many he took real quick. He felt like he was finding closing shots around the rim. He was 1 of 3 from 3, He went 9 of 22 from the field overall. So I mean, 6 of 19, which is not great, don't get me wrong, but it felt like he was finally getting to spots where he could make shots. Now, I don't know if it's just a Warren thing where he's going to be up and down and going to be have games where he's down 22, whatever, but it felt like he had a couple of shots that really just should have gone and that didn't, and it felt like he was kind of almost there. He was figuring out he had the matchup advantage against a lot of guys, and the Pacers were starting to feed him at times. So, to be honest, it seemed like he was working out. Now, from the bad, I thought the bench unit continued to pretty much suck. I mean, outside of some flashes, which is also my positive, Justin Holiday, the bench unit continues to sort of be the thing that is carrying this team down and weighing them down. I mean, all bench unit guys except McDermott were a minus on the court. Obviously, plus minus doesn't really mean much, but it felt like Derrick Rose kind of covered the bench. You had Wood, did this, Christian Wood did the same thing. I know Kennard started, but the Pacers bench, I believe, got outscored 46 to 18. I mean, that's miserable. I mean, I don't know whether it's why Aaron Holiday's not playing. I don't understand it. Unless he's somehow hurt or dealing with something, I don't get why he's not playing. McConnell's fine, but it can't be any worse than if you play Holiday, because maybe you get a flash where he scores 18 points. One of these games, McConnell's been very bleh. I mean, he's been very okay. Missed a couple layups, made one steal, didn't convert anything, made three assists and whatnot, but I don't know. I just don't see why McConnell was playing. Except, like I said on yesterday's podcast, except for the need to have a guy who can feed McDermott like nobody else can. Like, they just don't trust Holiday to get McDermott the ball, and McDermott's their best offensive player on the bench, so that's kind of the goal. But I'm not sure you're winning a game when you're running your bench and offense through McDermott. McDermott is not a player you can run the offense through. Mainly, he's the guy who sits in the corner, or maybe you run an action form eventually, or whatnot. But honestly, he's sort of an ancillary player that, when everything else is flowing, is the kind of guy that adds on top of that and kind of keeps the bench kind of rolling and kind of adds on top of, you know, he's like the chair on top of the ice cream, in my opinion. The other thing I kind of liked from tonight's game was I thought Sabonis was a little more reliable, not as many fouls. I thought he really kind of stayed on his feet instead of, you know, getting caught in a couple pump fakes. Drummond tried one time to get him, and he didn't do it. He's looked like a better defensive player. They played him a little more on Drummond and let Turner kind of roam a little bit more. But overall, I thought Sabonis was just much more reliable. Offensively, again, I mean, everybody kind of struggled. He went 8 of 18, but again, Sabonis felt like he was right there a few times. Felt like he had 4 or 5 shots around the rim that he could have converted, and he could have been 12 of 16 and won the game of the Pacers. So I don't fault him for that. I mean, it felt like one of those nights where nothing was falling, and to fight the way back in was pretty solid, in my opinion. Another thing I thought was bad. Malcolm Brogdon, I wouldn't say overall he was bad, but his shooting was terrible, and it was not the kind of shooting where it felt like Warren and Sabonis were almost there, you know, were rimming shots in and out, like just couldn't buy a basket, where Brogdon was taking threes, 1 of 6, couldn't make anything. It felt like it was just like, I don't know if they're bad shots or just tired legs or whatnot, but Brogdon looked terrible. Shooting the ball, obviously he still finished with 15, 11, and 8, so he's still obviously he's just a good player. He's going to have a good stat line every game. He's just an awesome player. But, you know, there's a level, right? So Brogdon, I think, is probably falling that, like, notch below where Vic was, right? I mean, like, a Vic-level guy who, in this moment, for the Pacers 2 years ago, stepped into a role where they needed a number one guy and became that. Brogdon just can't quite be that. He's sort of on the same wavelength that Turner is, that sort of notch below superstardom that is still really good. And you have a player like him can be really good, but you need sort of something else to become a superstar. And this is kind of that, where Brogdon could have shot 5 of 6 from three, had 2 clutch threes. He could have kind of elevated himself into this category of like, oh, maybe Brogdon is an all-star level point guard in the league, where I feel like he's just outside of that category to me. But still, very good player. Don't get me wrong. Had a solid night. Just, he could have been better, right? And that's the thing about Brogdon, is you have higher expectations for him so that when he doesn't meet them, it stinks. But like for a guy like who I liked also tonight, Edmund Sumner, who didn't shoot that well, but I thought showed, again, a couple flashes of what he can be, showed some signs that he could be a very good player for this Pacer team going forward. I have to figure out his role better, I have to figure out who to play him with, but he just has some unreal speed, some length that you just can't teach, and seems to sort of have made this kind of, I don't want to call it like super leap, but made this leap to a guy who should be in the rotation, the bench, basically probably bench point guard for now, as long as Aaron Holiday is apparently sitting on the bench for no reason. But Brogdon, on the other hand, is the kind of guy who you expect to put at 15, 11, and 8, so if he doesn't do better than that, is sort of considered a disappointment and whatnot. That I already hit it just right there, but the last kind of bad thing I saw was, why no young guys still? I don't know the answer to it. It's still perplexing to me why they don't play Aaron Holiday, why they aren't playing TJ Leaf really that much. They play Leaf like, what, 14 minutes, give or take, in the game? 12 minutes, sorry. I mean, Leaf was okay, but I mean, it seems like if you're going to go down with the bench, you might as well go down with your rookies, because McConnell play minutes isn't doing anything, and really, can it get that much worse than TJ McConnell? I mean, maybe it can, but I highly doubt that. And the last positive thing I liked, Justin Holiday. I thought, for a bench unit that was pretty miserable, he was the one bright spot. I thought he provided a nice spark off the bench. He could play with the starters. He finished the game with the starters. Like, he just was a solid player, and I can see why they got him, and I can see why him playing more minutes makes sense, because he can kind of play a combination of 2 to 4 and be really valuable to this team. But before we finish the podcast, the last thing we have to do was obviously touch on that end of sequence, let's say last minute, that was sort of just bleh. So I want to start this from a minute 42 left in the game when TJ Warren hits a great three-pointer off a great Brogdon assist to go up 94-90. And that's the moment where it felt like this Pacer team had pulled away enough where they were going to pull this game out of their ass, right? I mean, it felt like all night they're trailing by 7 or more points. They couldn't break this like 5-point deficit barrier the entire night. It felt like the last quarter. They had a miserable, really, third quarter, but so did Detroit, so it ended up being a net. I mean, the Pacers probably played 2 good quarters, the second and the fourth, and played 2 miserable quarters in the first and the third. But it felt like when TJ Warren hit the three, it was like, oh, they're going to pull this game out. They're going to be able to do it. But from that pretty much moment on, that nothing went right for the Pacers. So first you got Luke Kennard, who banks in a three or off like a bounce in three that should not have gone in. It felt like, well, that sucked. But then it just felt like everything got tight, right? So TJ Warren is clearly their kind of, I guess, go-to guy right now. It felt like maybe because he's the guy who kind of hit that big three in the preseason game against the Kings, which doesn't really matter, frankly. Obviously, the Kings suck, but he also was the only guy who really can get his own bucket without needing anybody's help, so maybe that's why. But it felt like they went to him and really at his own detriment. I mean, I know they got a Brogdon three attempt without 40 minutes left. That would have been really good if it went in. And they got a second Brogdon three, I think. Yeah, they got 2 Brogdon open threes, which made sense, but it seemed like those were sort of set up because they tried to get the ball through Warren, and then there was a lot of misdirection and whatnot, and then somehow fell into Brogdon's hands. I don't know what to make, you know. On the one hand, you have to give the Pacers credit with 12.9 for getting a good look for Malcolm Brogdon. On the other hand, it's like, could you be a little more creative in the last 2 seconds? The play they ran was, let's get Warren open and let him fading back for a three to win this. And I don't know if that was the play or not, but it seemed like that was kind of a shitty play, frankly. And then on defense, I mean, I don't know how much you fault that Derrick Rose layup. I mean, the Canards, like I said, banked in. I thought they played good D on the Rose layup. I think he just made a better shot. I thought Turner almost got there. I felt like it should have rimmed out, to be honest. I think Sabonis was surprised it went in. I don't know. You know, we can hit on Warren missing, taking that shot in 9 seconds. That was ridiculous. Obviously, he didn't know what time it was, and that's sort of a bad thing. I think it's something that comes with the guy with experience, with kind of better awareness of what the clock was. And the Pacers had a timeout left. I guess the only thing I could say was, should McMillan have seen the rebound Warren and immediately called the timeout and been like, nope, let's reset this, because he has 7.1 left or 9-something left? And I think so, maybe. I mean, I think the other thing is maybe Sabonis should have dribbled out and reset it. But here's the thing. On that kind of rebound, Sabonis, if you get somebody cutting the rim, you get an easy basket because everybody's scrambling. Nobody's going on. I know half the team's already back on defense, so that's kind of screwed them up. But if something goes right, if Warren makes the right cut, Sabonis hits them for the pass, the dunk, and they're up by 1 point with 6 seconds left, and then you're in the driver's seat. So I don't know how much to fault who for what. If, you know, in hindsight, yeah, Sabonis gets that rebound, McMillan should call a timeout right away, reset the play, give them 9 seconds, get him a good shot down one, and it probably would have worked. It could have worked. On the other hand, you know, he probably also should have drawn a better play with 2 seconds left. There should have been some, probably an action. I would have honestly gone for 2 instead of 3 to win the game. I would have figured out how to get a long open 2 to somebody like Sabonis at the top of the key. You know, whether it's a Turner screen or flanking everybody out. I mean, this is a common theme of McMillan, is that he's not creative enough at the end of games and can't figure out how to make, you know, get guys. Basically, his creativity used to be, hey, Vic, here's the ball, score, and that's how it worked. And honestly, I don't know how many coaches are that creative at the end of game plays. A lot of times it's just, hey, my best player, give him the ball, fairway, him to score. And I think he thinks Warren is his best offensive player right now on the court. You know, obviously, if Vic's in the game, that ball came to Vic, he's shooting that fade back shot. He might make that, to be honest, like I said earlier. I mean, Vic is such a clutch player, you know, he probably would have made it. But, you know, even with when they used to have Bojan, it felt like they just weren't creative enough. When Bojan was the main guy trying to get him the ball, it felt like he was getting them weird shots. But on the end of the game, also, it's really hard to get your best player, especially when you don't have multiple guys who can make game-winning shots, the ball, because teams kind of plan for it. But I think I would have tried to get Sabonis the ball at the top of the key. I think that would have been kind of the key. Or get Brogdon another three. But I guess Brogdon doesn't really have the quick release that you need to win the game. But I don't know. Especially, it just felt like Warren, after he hit that three, was really in a funk. You know, with the travel and the terrible 3.7 seconds left and whatnot, it just felt like he wasn't going to win the game, really. If it was, it was going to be redemption and crazy, but it seemed like he was sort of in a funk, and you're better off just trying to get another guy a shot. I mean, I would have played for overtime, to be honest, like I said. I would have fared to get an 18-footer because they're not expecting that. They're expecting you to go for the three, and somehow you create some action, scare, you know, misdirect at the top of the key and have Sabonis sitting there, get their ball and shoot the ball with maybe right there to drain a 18-footer to tie the game. That's what I would have done, but I mean, I can't fault Mullen for the play. I get why he wanted to get more in the ball and win the game. It seemed like they could have done a better job. Earlier in that, like I said, I don't think there was a better opportunity than the Brogdon's two threes. I mean, frankly, they were wide open shots. He should have made them. You think he would have made one of them. I think he went 0 for 3 in the last 2 minutes from three. He makes one of those, they win the game. So, it was one of those nights where just everything wasn't going their way. They somehow pulled their way back into it, took their first lead, I think with like something like 3 minutes left, or 2:53 after they took their first lead, and then, you know, one of those where, everything got to go their way the last 3 minutes, and of course it went their way for about a minute 30, and then everything went to shit after that, and they lost. And, you know, this might come back to bite them because Detroit's a division opponent, and they might be tied with them when it comes to playoff seeding, but they play them two more times, but they also probably won't play them with Vic, but also Detroit might get Blake Griffin back, which makes them even tougher to play. So, again, when this sucks, the Pacers should have won, frankly. They had the opportunities to win at least. But to the game as a whole, they probably should not have served a win because they shot worse than the Pistons. They got out-rebounded by the Pistons, I believe. I mean, overall, Detroit just played a better game. I mean, if we're looking at it, Detroit shot better from the field, better from three, better from free throw, had more rebounds. But they lost the steals. Basically, that was it. And they lost the turnover battle. That was the difference. I mean, that's what the Pacers were in this game, despite shooting 41% to Detroit's 45% and shooting 28% of three to Detroit's 54%. Overall, though, I mean, I think you can't be too disappointed in this game yet. I'll preach it one more time. Wait 10 games, then panic. Wait 10 games, then panic. That's all for the Locked On Pacers podcast. We will be back again tomorrow with a preview of the Brooklyn game. We'll be back on Thursday with a post-Brooklyn show. I think I'll be doing that one again. And then Friday, we'll have a preview of the weekend's games. I believe it's Cleveland, and I'm blanking on the last game. I should probably know. It's kind of my job to know this. This is sort of what I do. Let's pull the Pacers schedule real fast. I'm killing time. Don't you love me? Love a podcast where you read off the internet and you need a moment. They finished the week with Cleveland and Chicago. I knew that Midwest teams, rest of the division. So, I mean, there's a pretty good chance this team is 2-4 by the end of the week, which is not terrible. Somehow they might be able to pull out in Brooklyn. I don't know. I don't think Brooklyn's as good as we think they are yet because they don't have KD. Because shocked, they have 40% of their cap tied to their best player who is not playing, which means the team is not as deep as it should be. Shocked. Anyways, that's all our Locked On Pacers podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at FreeManM5. You can follow my co-host at TEASTNBA. And we will see you guys again tomorrow.